Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. Thanks so much for listening. Big show this week. We've got two guests in honor of WrestleMania week. We have the publisher and editor of the Wrestling Observer newsletter, Dave Meltzer, to break down all things WrestleMania. Spoilers ahead. We also talk about the John Oliver segment, touch on WWE going to Fox in a few months. So for all the wrestling fans out there, you'll get Dave Meltzer in a little bit. We kick off the show, though, with an interview with Taylor Rooks from Bleacher Report. Taylor is starting a new show for Bleacher Report, an interview show, and we talked to her about her career, the show, and being one of the fresh faces in sports media. Before we get to Taylor, let me just tell you in the archives there, we've got Darren Rovell from last week. If you are into sports betting, that was a great interview. I actually got so much feedback from people who don't like Darren on Twitter, saying it was a good podcast because of he was on his game and there was a lot of good sports betting talk. So we have Rovell in the archives, and since it's WrestleMania week, we have Roman Reigns in the archives. So check those out as well, and please hit the subscribe button if you can. iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, all of those, you can listen to the SI Media podcast. Let's get going with this edition. You're going to hear from Taylor Rooks first from Bleach Report, then Dave Meltzer from the Wrestling Observer newsletter, right here on the SI Media podcast. Here we go with Taylor Rooks. All right, joining me now on the Sports Illustrated Media podcast, one of the up-and-coming rising stars is what they say in sports media, Bleacher Report's Taylor Rooks, who has a new show coming up on Bleacher Report. Taylor, how are you?
I'm fantastic, especially after that nice intro.
Well, how is that? Now, I was gonna say, how is that when you Google yourself and you see rising star? But you might say you don't Google yourself, but I feel like we all Google ourselves in this business.
Yeah, when I first started, Googling was like the thing. I'm like, right. What are people saying today? Now, honestly, I try my best not to do that.
You do?
Yeah, because nothing good ever comes out of Googling yourself. Now, when people are talking about the show, I want to see the articles that people put out. But I can genuinely say I consciously tried not to Google myself.
I worked here at SI for 13 years. I left. I went to Fox Sports. Made a huge mistake that I regret every day of my life. Worked there for like 2.5 years. Got laid off. Came back to Sports Illustrated. But once I got laid off, every time I Googled myself, the top thing was awful announcing. Jimmy Traina laid off from Fox Sports. And like then I started SI and I would Google myself, like, can this get off the page now? I think it just like finally got off
the
front
page. You're like, can I pay Google?
Yes. I think it finally got off the front page like a couple of months ago, thank God. So, but when you are Googled, rising star always comes up. How does that feel?
It's really nice. Yeah. I think that that's probably like the best compliment that you can ever get, is just to be recognized for the progress that you're making within the industry and what you're trying to do and the stories you're trying to tell. So I definitely like to see that, but I'm a person, like, my friends call it destination addiction. Like, right. I'm always thinking, like, that next thing is going to be, like, the best thing, and I'm ready for people to Google and see that, you know? But it's very nice to see what's up there right now.
So, Taylor has a new show that will be on Bleacher Report's digital platform. Am I saying that correct?
You are.
And social media. Mm-hmm. And it's called Take It There with Taylor Rooks, and it debuts April 3rd. So, you're either going to hear this on the day it debuts or a day or two after, so you can check it out. Tell us about the show and what's going on in the first episode, especially.
Yeah, so the show, it is an interview show. Right. Every episode, it'll be one athlete or entertainer or public figure, whoever it may be, and we sit down with them, and what you're going to see is like just the interview. It's not about segments. It's not about gimmicks. It's about two people having a conversation and talking to each other. Right. First episode is Jimmy Butler.
Nice.
So he was really, really good. One of the really unique things about the show, though, is they invite us into their home usually. So we're interviewing Jimmy Butler in his home in Philadelphia, you know, an environment that's nice for him, where he's comfortable. And all of his friends are there. So you're really seeing what Jimmy's everyday is like when he's not playing basketball. In each episode, we also do something that it's called a slice of life, so something they'd be doing whether we were there or not.
Okay.
So in Jimmy's episode, we play spades with him and his friends, and it weaves throughout the episode, which I think is really nice.
Right.
And then we also have slated Saquon Barkley's an episode, Damian Lillard's an episode, Rudy Gobert, Elena Deladon, some other people we can't tell you because it's a surprise.
How much input if it's, it could be everything or a little, do you have in the booking? Was it your idea to have Jimmy Butler first episode?
Yeah.
Or someone producing that and giving you that pitch?
Have a lot of input into like everything about it. I'm kind of a control freak and I'm trying to get
but
better
that's good.
At that.
You got to be. You have yeah, to. If you're doing yeah. an interview show, you have to be.
For sure.
You have
For
to
sure.
be.
So it's definitely a team effort between me and the booking staff. But I said, I feel like Jimmy would be a good number one. He's a star. Right. There's a lot of storylines around him. And then we're also trying to think of events that are coming. Like, we want Damian Lillard to maybe be number two because playoffs are starting. Saquon right. Barkley, number three, because NFL draft, So it's, there's moving parts all the time, but I am very involved in who we book and what we do with that guest.
When you're doing an interview, what do you want to get out of it?
Yeah. I want to get out of it the same thing that I would want to get out of any conversation. Like, I really don't even go into it like, okay, I'm interviewing this person. I want them to say this and get them to say this. Because I realize that, news comes from just organic conversation.
Right.
But, when you make that person feel like they're being interviewed and they have to be on, you're never going to get from them, what you want to get from them.
Okay, that's
interesting. I talk to them like I would talk to, my friends.
Right.
And for me, that's worked, and we've gotten really good information that way.
It's interesting with athletes because I feel there's only a small percentage, I think, who are good interviews.
True.
Because, they have teams that don't want them to say anything. They have PR mm-hmm. people that don't want them to say anything. So I think you said something really smart there about the news usually comes from something organic. Mm-hmm. They know when you're trying to get them to say something inflammatory.
For sure.
And then you get the standard answers and then it's a boring interview. So mm-hmm. I think that's a really great approach to it.
Yeah, I remember. So I decided to start a podcast and I started it maybe, I had two episodes done before I went to SNY.
Right.
But when I got to New York, I was like, I want to restart the podcast because it was just a really fun vehicle for me. So we had Victor Cruz on as the first episode. And this was after the trip to Miami and the boat picture that was all the talk in New York. And so I'm thinking, I would love for someone to talk about Miami because nobody has, but not in a defamatory way. I just want them to say what happened. So Victor comes on the show and it was before the Super Bowl and the Super Bowl was in Houston that year. And I said, so you're going to Houston for the Super Bowl? I was like, I've never been to Houston. I was like, and I've also never been to Miami, but I know you've been to Miami. And so then he's like, goes to what Miami was like, and then it wasn't worth it. And then that became new just because we were talking about Miami. It wasn't why did you go to Miami
right
before? Because your guard is already up. And I just never want someone's guard to be up when we're doing an interview.
You worked at SNY, which is a local sports station here in New York. The Mets are on it. And your podcast there, and forgive me because I have a terrible memory, but I do know that you had multiple episodes that ended up getting big news out of them from what I remember.
Yeah.
So that, for local, obviously it wasn't a national network at that time. Now you're at Bleacher, which is national.
Mm-hmm.
To do that on the local level is impressive for
Thank
sure.
Thank you so much. Yeah, yeah. And I'm so thankful to everybody at SNY, just allowing me to have a platform and giving me just creative control to do what I wanted with the podcast and people coming in whenever I had an episode. SNY was great. They were so flexible. And I wouldn't have so many of the opportunities that I have now if it wasn't for them believing in that vision that I had then. So SNY was great. And the podcast was one of my favorite things that I've done.
So I know you've worked at CBS Sports Network.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I did sideline for them.
Big Ten Network.
Yeah.
SNY and now Bleacher. Was so I mean already to even have those four things on your resume already is pretty wild.
Oh, thank you.
When did you know this is what you wanted to do and get involved in sports media?
Yeah. I always knew I wanted to do something involved with media and just everyone in my family is we're just a sports family.
Right.
I'm from Georgia. We're a football family really mainly, but it's just what I've grown up around. And so
Falcons fan
always. And please don't bring it up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Don't bring up the score. Everyone loves to do that every time. Yeah,
I have to say as someone who's done an internet column for 15 years, I am a little surprised it still comes up, and I shouldn't be, but my God,
they
bust it out those 328 jokes like there's no tomorrow still.
Anytime I say it, I'm I love
it
how
has not,
I asked
it has not,
not
died
to say
at,
it and then we started talking about it.
It has not died at all. It has not died
it
at
is
all.
Not, and I don't know if it ever will.
I don't, I'm
which
at
is
the point
really
where
upsetting.
I don't think so.
Yeah, which is very upsetting as a Falcons fan. But yes, grew up in a sports family and I always loved talking to people. And then I'd probably say it was maybe 10th or 11th grade, I said, what if I was just like a sports journalist and it was all that I would talk about? Like, one day I want my own show and I want to be interviewing all these people. And it's funny, like at my high school graduation, our class president like gave a speech, and in the speech she was talking about different people, and she goes, and one day Taylor Rooks will have her own show. And so like she like messaged me after I said that I was having this job. She's like, I said this in our speech. It was a really cute moment. But I guess I've known for a while, like since I was a teenager.
And was it just, I mean, obviously you're very affable. You can obviously do the conversation thing very well. Were you a natural from the beginning? Did you, did you have to practice it, maybe finding like an interview form, or you were just a natural and you were able to chat with anybody?
Well, I love talking, like annoyingly so the talking definitely came easy. I was that annoying kid that asked like 80 questions all the time. But there's definitely people like I would watch and see how they're interviewed, and I like their different styles. I know everybody says Oprah, but I loved watching Oprah. Right. Like that's what me and my mom did every day when I go home from school. We watched Oprah.
Right. Not a bad role model.
Yeah, definitely.
She's
not
done all right.
Yeah, she's been okay.
Yeah,
you know,
she's done all right.
Yeah. So, but it's funny because I look back on stuff I did when I was in college, and even stuff that I did at the Big Ten Network, and you're like, why did anyone hire me? Like, my voice is terrible. My questions are terrible. The way I sound is terrible. But so I'm always getting better. Every single day, I'm like, I need to fix this and I need to get better at that in time. But that's kind of a part of it, is like growth. But I have so many things I want to improve on.
How'd you get the Big Ten job? That was your first job?
Yeah.
Was there a crazy story there? Was it just something you applied and did? I don't do video. What's the word when you do the video?
Like a reel?
Audition.
Yeah, so when I was in college, my sophomore year, I started working with Fox Sports and Scout.com. Mm-hmm. And just through that, I would always put my clips online, and I would always be at every Illinois basketball and football game. So I'd see Big Ten Network people all of the time.
Okay.
And so once they just asked me, hey, will you do sideline for like an Iowa game? So I go to Iowa and I did sideline for them for their spring game. And then my senior year rolls around. I was doing stuff with them periodically throughout college, still working for Fox Sports and Scout.com. But senior year comes around, I graduate. I have no job. I have sent my reel to like every local station in the United States. Like, but I have no job. And so me and my friends, before I was going to move back down to Georgia and figure it out, we decided to go to a Drake concert. On the way back from the Drake concert, my phone rings and it's the Big Ten Network. And they're like, hey, we are thinking about having like a correspondent that is on the show every single day, and we'd love for it to be you. I'm going to move back to Georgia literally in like 3 days. Like everything's packed up.
Right.
So I'm like freaking out because I think I want to have no job. I obviously say yes. I moved to Chicago and like 2 days after that. And then I was at the Big Ten Network for 2 years. But that's when, like, when college students are talking to me, I'm always like, I did not know what I was doing.
Right.
I did not know until
so what do you think made them give you that call? Just
well, so
from your reel?
They saw me working with them throughout the year.
Yeah.
But then they realized like we need to do something with social media and like do something that caters to younger people. Like people don't like to say that a lot of it's luck, but that was literally luck.
I don't. If you're in sports media and you don't think luck's a little bit of a factor, you're nuts.
Or a huge factor.
I mean, there's obviously different degrees of it, and I think, you know, I'd like to think that talented people usually can maybe find a way, but there's so much politics involved, obviously, and, you know, being a woman, there's that whole thing going on, which has become a bigger thing in the last few years to get more women involved in sports media, which a lot of companies at least seem like they're trying to do. I don't know if you agree or if you think it's needs to be much better or they're on the right track, but I also think, and we'll get to that, but in addition to luck, I've said this since the day I started working at SI, when people say, like, how do you get a job in sports media? And I always say this, I think who you know is maybe more important than what you know, too. It's so much of just this person likes you, that person likes you. I mean, you have to have some ability. I'm not saying, you know, you could be a complete hack, but who you know is a huge part of it. Whenever I'm like, there's many internships, just do whatever you can. And
because it's like, what if I just didn't go to that one game where I met Quentin Carter, who works for Big Ten Network? You know, like, there's just so many things. What if I graduated a year earlier, a year later, and they weren't looking for that position? Like, there's just so many things that could have happened. And I mean, I have full confidence I eventually could have gotten to places I wanted to go, but it probably wouldn't have happened the way it did, or maybe as quickly as it did. Like, so much of it is luck, but you also have to be very prepared and ready when that luck and that opportunity presents itself,
right?
Which I think is really the key thing.
Now, is the, so with Big Ten Network, you did Sideline and with CBS. Then SNY, I know you hosted and you had the podcast. Mm-hmm. And now at Bleacher, you're doing an interview show.
Yeah.
I don't want to ask you if you like an interview show more than hosting a Sideline, because now you're doing the interview show. But
I also genuinely do.
So was the ultimate goal always to do an interview show? Okay.
100%.
The Sideline Report, not your thing?
No. Okay. Like, talking to people is my thing, and like it always has been.
Yeah.
Like, what I wanted throughout like media and journalism has changed throughout time. Like when I was at the Big Ten Network, I'm like, this is the best job ever.
Yeah.
I want to stay doing this forever. I love being on the show, and I did like being on the show, but I reached a point where I realized like I didn't want to just be on a show for like 2 minutes at a time talking about social media, which is like great, but it just wasn't for me.
Right.
So I said, okay, I want to move to SNY, where I'd be anchoring and hosting and reporting. Love SNY. I love everyone at SNY. I'm so thankful to them. I wouldn't be able to do this if it wasn't for them.
When you took the job at SNY, was that your first time living in New York, I would assume?
Yes. Now, and I almost said no because of that.
I was going to say, give me like the Georgia woman now moves to New York. What was that like for you?
Because luckily,
some people can't handle it and some people thrive on
it. For sure. Luckily, I went to the University of Illinois. So I was in Chicago periodically throughout my time in college. And then going from like Georgia to Chicago to New York was much easier than going Georgia to New York.
Right. Good progression.
But I always thought I hated New York. Like, I did not want to take the job at SNY. I'm like, all these lights and people.
Yeah.
But you really can make New York small. And I realized that very early. But I seriously, like, I remember being like, I don't know if I want to live in New York. It's not for me. Like, I could just stay in Chicago. But I didn't want comfort to be a reason I stayed at a place.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not moving to New York just because I thought there's too many people would be like so stupid.
It's got to be.
But I was close.
If you aren't from here in New York, you know, you would think someone offers you a TV job and it's just like a layup, like you take it. You got it. Like, you don't turn down TV in New York if you're trying to get in this business. But this city can be rough for some people. So it's not like the automatic that I think a lot of people might think it is.
For sure. No, I thought about it for a while. I really had to say, like, you know, is this the right place? And like, what do you want to be in this business? And like, who do you want to be in this business? And what's going to be the best thing? Like, I was talking to Mike Hall, who works at the Big Ten Network, when I was thinking of taking the job. And he said, okay, if you take money and ego out of the equation, which place will you be better at in 2 years? And I was like, it's SNY.
Right.
And that's what really made me say, like, I'm going to move to New York and I'm going to figure it out. But like I said, people have this like misconception that New York is just Times Square.
Right,
what I thought. Seriously.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, there's no place to live in New York. Like, that's not lights everywhere. But there are places. So if anybody is debating moving to
New York,
there's
nowhere to live that's cheap, but you can live in New York.
There's nowhere to live that's cheap. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
even crazy. The places that should be cheap aren't cheap.
Yeah, exactly. And then from SNY, now I'm curious, because SNY, obviously you're doing TV and the podcast, and it is local. And then you go to Bleacher, which, yes, it's affiliated with Turner, but it's still a website. And there's still that thing about, like, you go from TV to a website.
Mm-hmm.
Was that any issue for you at all?
Yeah, it was something I thought about, but right now the digital space is like the thriving space. Like, that's where everybody gets their news. Like, content really is king right now, that digital content. And also, if I learned one thing at SNY, it's like, when your interview is good and your work's good, it'll be everywhere.
Right, right.
Like, it will be on TV too.
Yeah.
It's just about making interviews that everybody wants to see. And like, Bleacher Report has really perfected that craft of like getting a clip that matters with someone saying something that matters and then making you then want to see the full thing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what the goal is with my show. But yeah, I in the beginning I was like, you know, should I go digital? But I know for sure like digital is the place to be.
Well, also you could always keep in the back of your head that, I mean, they are with Turner
for sure
and CNN. So there's going to be TV opportunities,
and they give
I'm
such
sure.
good support too
yeah, yeah.
with the show, and you'll see it on Inside the NBA and different things like that. So it's been good.
It's funny because you've mentioned social media a couple of times.
Yeah,
I'm sure you're aware, but I looked at your Wikipedia page and they have a sentence on there that says she is a well-known staple on social media sites such as Twitter and Instagram. Isn't that
who makes Wikipedia? Like,
now,
who
isn't
wrote
that a hell of a sentence to have on your Wikipedia page?
It's wild, because like, to people, that's like a good thing. Like, that's a check on your resume. I mean, I don't know. I guess I maybe have a lot of followers on those sites.
So what is? Because I feel like, tell me if you agree. I feel like I've been on social media a long time. I'm sure you probably have too.
Yeah.
You go like in ups and downs and ebbs and flows, and you know, there's days you hate it, there's days it's fun. I think if you're a woman in this business, you probably have a whole different experience on there.
For
than
sure.
If you're a man, what, like, where do you, like, is it something that you know you have to do for your job, so you're constantly monitoring it? Do you need breaks from it? What's, like, how do you handle all that?
Yeah, well, it's definitely something I know I have to do for my job.
Yeah.
And I have, there for me, there's so many pros of social media, like, in a lot of ways, social media has helped my career so much. They spread the clips. They retweet the clips. They comment on the clips. Like, that's what makes them bigger. So as many disadvantages as there are to Twitter and Instagram, there really is just as many advantages. Okay. And I enjoy social media. I do think that it is, like, the best in people and the worst in people. And that's kind of what you have to keep in your mind. But I don't know. I don't really say I take breaks from social media because I never want to give something like that that much power that I feel like I got to get off it or I'm going to, you know. I just use it when I use it and I try my best not to live on it. I used to be on it way more than I am now. Now it's like if there's something going on and I see people are saying, I'll wake up, check the news. But yeah, it's the wild, wild west on the internet.
Have you had any really bad negative experiences with it or has it been mostly positive?
I wouldn't say negative. I mean, there's always like mean comments or like ridiculous people saying things. Maybe the thing that I would say probably annoys me the most sometimes about social media is like you're always seen as like a woman first and a journalist second.
Right.
So if I'm posting an interview or something, it's like, dang, you look good in this video. Or like everybody wants to talk about that.
Right.
It's like, this is actually like a really good interview.
Right,
Can we listen to it and look at it?
Right.
You know, that's annoying. But I haven't had any crazy negative parts to it. Yeah.
I think it depends on what you put out there a little bit too.
Mm-hmm. I will say, like, I talk a lot about like social issues and stuff.
Right.
I talked a lot about like Colin Kaepernick and racism in sports and stuff. And there's always like the extreme people that didn't want to like call you names or whatever. That does bother me. But if anything, it's just more sad that's our reaction to things that we disagree with. Like I see things on the internet I disagree with all the time. And there's ways to have like a respectful discussion about those things. It just sucks that people jump to being like disrespectful in a situation where it doesn't have to be that way.
I know she's a huge lightning rod, but I remember looking at some of the tweets Jemele Hill would get when she was in the Trump thing. And I mean, I don't know. Part of me is like, listen, everyone in this business, if you're a public figure, you put stuff out there, you got to expect some heat. But this was like another level. And I don't understand how Twitter allows it. I just don't understand.
It's just bullying.
But really just over the top, like not even, you know, I don't know how she does it. I give her credit.
For sure.
Because I would not be able to deal with that day in and day out.
It really is harassment. Like, it really isn't even just bullying. Yeah. It's harassment. But I don't know. Like, I know people always say, you know, you signed up for this. But, like, no, we didn't. Like, you don't sign up.
Right.
Like, you don't sign up for that.
Right. Listen, if you do what we do, you got to expect a few, you know, you're an idiot, you're an asshole, I hate you, you suck, you can't write. Like, that's all sort of like, I got it.
Mm-hmm.
But then it goes, but I when it goes to the other levels of just, obviously anything, if it, you know, racist or threats, I don't know. I just don't understand how Twitter allows it. It's just mind boggling.
Because, like, I want people to disagree with me, you know, like, I'm totally fine with anyone who says, like, I don't think Kaepernick should have kneeled. That's great. Like, I'm not here to change your mind on that. I want to hear your opinion on it.
Right.
But when you're, like, saying things that have nothing to do with an argument and you're name-calling and you're just being rude and ridiculous, that's when I kind of draw the line.
You said that if you put a video out or whatever, there's always a comment about how you look or you're dressing, how you're dressing. With that going on, do you feel like, okay, I got to do, like, you know, doubly a good job? That was a really bad phrase there. so people can, like, focus on the interview, or you can't pay attention to it because those people are, like, a lost cause already and they're not going to change their mind.
I think it's twofold. I do think that a lot of them are lost causes.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that, like I said, when the interview was good, people are going to listen. But I've had really, really good interviews where it still happens.
Yeah.
And there was this time, like, I was thinking about, okay, maybe if I like sit at a desk, it won't matter. But then I'm like, it's not my job to make people comfortable. Like,
yeah.
I'm not doing anything. Like, I'm wearing pants and a turtleneck. And everyone's like, dang, look at her. Like, at this point, it doesn't matter what I do. And it's just like, that's not
right.
my place.
They could put you in a behind a desk and you're still going to get, those people are not going to not make that comment.
They're still going to be immature. They're still going to be someone who says, oh, he's looking at you like he like you. Like,
no, he's not.
He's answering the question. Like, you know, like, it doesn't matter at all who it is.
Athletes do have a reputation. Like, it's not, no offense, I'm not saying it just because it's you. I mean, I think anytime there's any athlete getting interviewed by a woman, there's always this perception. And not because of the woman, just, you know, especially if you're in this business, you've heard the stories about athletes.
But, like, how wild is that? Like, that those are things that I have to think about. But, like, you could be interviewing whoever, and you know you're not going to be subjected to comments that are like, oh, he want to risk it all. Or, like, why are you looking at him like that? It's like, I'm looking at him the way I look at you. If I get
comments like that when I talk about Derek Jeter. People are like, stop being in love with Derek Jeter. But whatever. It's a little different. No, I Derek Jeter and The Rock, I tweet about them constantly, and I always get,
The Rock is like a pretty cool guy. He seems like a very nice guy.
He's my dream podcast guest. Who's your dream guest? Yes, who's your dream?
Serena. Oh my goodness, Serena.
You get Serena.
I hope like one day I'm going to do it. I know one day in my lifetime I will interview
Serena. She has enough endorsements where like you'll get, during the Super Bowl, I would get emails daily from Bumble. Serena was like pitching Bumble. Like, she was the spokesperson.
Like the dating app?
Yes. And I'm thinking to myself, well, first of all, should the spokesperson for Bumble be married? Doesn't that sort of contradict the whole thing?
She's not on Bumble anymore.
Right. But she was like the spokesperson. And they, you know, they didn't offer interviews, obviously, but, you know, they used her in their like marketing and stuff. So
really?
Maybe there'll be some company that she's doing, you know, endorsements
Fingers crossed.
And then you get Serena.
Fingers crossed. Like, that's for sure my dream interview.
Have you had interviews where you're like, oh my God, that was terrible. That was really bad.
I'm sure I've had more like times I was on TV and been like, oh damn, that was bad. I don't know if I've had an interview I walked away with bad, but I remember.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. No, I don't think I've had like a.
I've had so many.
You've also been doing this longer than me. I'm going to have that interview was so bad.
Like, I had Gronk on. I've interviewed Gronk. Probably like 5 or 6 times, and he's usually great and he's a good guy, but I had him on one time where it was through Tide and like I'd be like, so tell me about like, you know, a prank you and Tom Brady have played, it and he'd be like, oh well, you know, I love Tide Pods, and I'd be like, okay, and then I'd be like, all right, tell me how's your injury, and he's like, well, he's like, when I do my laundry with Tide. And I'm not running this interview. Like, I didn't even run it, so.
Okay, yeah, no, I haven't had something that I can't run yet, but I've just had times on TV that I really messed up, like. Remember when I first moved to New York, my sports are football and basketball, both pro and college. That's what I like, and some baseball. I don't watch hockey. I know really nothing about it.
Yeah.
And I guess this guy is like pretty legendary here. Messier.
I don't know if you're kidding or if you're being serious right now.
No, I know he's legendary here.
I mean, I'm not a hockey guy,
when I first got to New York, though, I did not. And I don't remember. I said his name wrong. It wasn't like a butcher, but it wasn't right. And that I was like, oh, I'm going to get killed for this, especially in New York.
That's
wasn't
not
good.
That's not good.
That was not good. That's probably like a time I remember like,
did you get the heat on social media?
Not as much as I thought.
Right.
You know, because Aaron once, then we fixed it.
Yeah, because people don't care about hockey.
Yeah,
that's
what it's, luckily.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I would have never messed up, you know, if football or basketball.
If you would have went on SNY and been like, oh, Derek Jeter went 3 for 4, you would not have been able to check total media that.
Yeah, yeah.
Hockey, you get away with it.
But now I'll never forget it. I'll never forget it.
Yeah, he is a legendary figure here. There's no doubt about that.
I learned so much about sports that, like, I didn't really watch. Just working at SNY, which was really cool.
So you're doing a lot of interviews now to promote the show?
Mm-hmm.
Or you are?
Yeah.
Do you like being interviewed? Because when an interviewer gets interviewed, I always think it's kind of weird.
It is weird. Yeah. It's weird, but I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
I do prefer asking the questions.
Yeah.
But one thing that I try to like find some comfort in is like whenever I'm interviewing somebody who I know is also in media, the interview is always so much easier because we'll talk and talk. So I hope I'm making the interview easy.
We're having a conversation. It's great. I've enjoyed it thoroughly. It's, you know, I don't like to just do like question, answer.
I hate so boring. That.
Yeah. And even with athletes, I think once it's hard, you have to know them a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then once you do and you get in groove, you have like a conversation and it's always much better.
Way better, for sure. Yeah. I think that's the main thing. Like making it feel like a conversation gives you answers that you would get in a conversation. Making it feel like an interview will give you press conference interview answers.
Is there like a time limit? Because it's the internet. Is it the show like 30 minutes? Can you go as long and short as you want? How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, we really could make it as long as we want.
That's
I would
the
say
of,
that the episodes will probably be like 15 to 20.
Okay.
But yeah, we could do whatever. If we had an interview that was so good. Like, for example, with Damian Lillard, we sat with him for like an hour. Saquon, it was an hour and a half. Like, but then you just get the best stuff.
Right.
And, you know, we always have talks about, should we then at the end of the season release like the best you've never seen or something like that? But we've gotten some really like good stuff that will be able to be condensed well.
And is the show, is that your only gig for Bleacher Report? Are you doing other things? It's just the show?
Just the show. Yeah. And then sometimes I'll do the Twitter show with Turner.
Okay.
They
right.
do like a show during the Thursday night games. But this show is taking up so much of my time because we travel.
So you go to
we go. And so you have
did you go to Portland
travel days. Went to Portland.
Right.
We went to Utah for Rudy Gobert. We went to Washington for Lana Deladon. We interviewed Saquon at his home in L.A. He was training out in L.A. We went to Philly for Jimmy Butler. So it's a lot of travel, but my frequent flyer miles thank me.
So. And so you have like. So it sounds like you have like five episodes done, and then are you getting ready for more?
Yes, and we have lots lined up, but you know, like you never want to say it until you have it in the can. But we definitely have very like exciting guests lined up.
Well, that's great. I'm looking forward to it, and should be exciting. I think I could just tell by your personality that you'll do an interview where it's not the same old, same old. So much of this business is the same old, same old.
Right.
Like you just want something different every now and again. And I think the things that are different, whether it's like Katie Nolan or whether it's Scott Van Pelt on ESPN or
love them both,
anyone who's like different ends up, you know, I love Good Morning Football, the starters on NBA. Mm-hmm. Anything that's different is what I sort of gravitate to because it's just so much the same.
Yeah.
So like, I could tell your interviewing style will be different than the...
Yeah,
everything else
thank you. And I think it will be. I really, truly believe you will watch it and think that, like, you're there and you're just hanging out. And that's one of the reasons I really like this slice of life component is because that really gives you the feel that you're in that room. Like, we're just playing spades with, like, Jimmy and his three best friends.
Right.
And it just feels very organic. And they'll all feel that way. I hope they will.
All right. Well, like I said, I'm looking forward to it. Take It There with Taylor Rooks debuts this week.
Yes, yes.
So anytime you're on BleacherReport.com, you can find it, basically.
You can find it on BleacherReport.com. Yeah. You can find it on the Bleacher Report YouTube channel. You can find it on the BR app. You can find it on IGTV. It's everywhere.
We went through this beforehand. It's on the free BR app. Not
yes,
the, one.
The free BR app.
I know Bleacher Report has the paid app. Everyone's all about the paid app.
Take It There's for everybody.
This is free. Anything that's free, you just take. It's crazy. Like this whole, all these streaming apps, it's, you know, I know Bleacher, at least Bleacher, they have game, you know, they have soccer on there and stuff like that, but man, I'm tired of all this streaming stuff. Like it's becoming
tired of
crazy.
Taking your wallet out. I feel you.
Apple
feel
now is going to have their streaming thing with Oprah.
Yes. So which I'm tuned in. Oprah can take my money. Yeah. She can have it all.
All right. Well, I appreciate you coming in. Very
I
nice of you
having
come,
me.
Yeah. Anytime. And, I wish you luck. Thanks.
Yes. And please tell Sal I said hi.
I will tell Sal. My buddy Sal Licata works at SNY.
Hi, Sal Licata.
I'm a Yankee fan. I would watch SNY because I like, you know, I know Mark Malusis and a couple of the other guys there. SNY for a local network does a really good job with their stuff.
They definitely do. There's so many like really creative minds there. Everybody has like a vision for what they want in the network to be. So it's a great place. And I love the
people. It's rough for them because they're the Mets station. The Mets are always bad this year. It looks like they'll be good if their pitchers stay healthy. So maybe this will be a good year for SNY there.
For sure.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Taylor. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. All right. This is WrestleMania week, the biggest week of the year for the WWE. The Super Bowl of wrestling, as they say. So there is nobody better to speak to than the authority on wrestling news, the publisher and editor of the Wrestling Observer Newsletter, Dave Meltzer. Dave, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for coming on. This is the big week here. So, well, let me start with that. You follow this, obviously, since the beginning. WrestleMania, still a spectacle for the WWE. The business of WrestleMania, is it bigger than ever still? with the company?
Well, it's different than ever. I mean, as far as like the live gate for the MetLife Stadium is probably going to be the biggest in the history of pro wrestling, and probably by a pretty significant degree.
Wow.
Because they can raise the ticket prices. They've been raising the ticket prices, and demand for live tickets is through the roof.
Yeah.
Because they're no longer on pay-per-view and they're on the WWE Network, it's different.
Yeah.
You know, a WrestleMania might have done, you know, anywhere from 500 to 850,000 buys in the United States alone, and, you know, upwards of a million if you include worldwide, at a price of, you know, like $75, whereas now, yeah, it'll be on the WWE Network, probably the day of WrestleMania. It might be 1.8 million, might be 1.9 million subscribers, but that's at $9.99. So overall, that you can't the business can't compare to the pay-per-view era. There will never be another show, probably for a long, long time, where all the revenue, you know, comes close to what Rock and John Cena did years ago.
Right. And just in time for WrestleMania, John Oliver of HBO did a 23-minute segment on wrestlers, the WWE superstars not being employees of Vince McMahon and being independent contractors, and basically painted an ugly picture of what they have to go through as independent contractors. I don't want to rehash the piece because we've all seen it. What I want to ask you is, because no one has more inside information than you. Do we know yet how Vince reacted to that piece? I know they put out a statement inviting him to WrestleMania, but I'd love to know if you know what was the mood with Vince, Triple H, Stephanie after that segment.
You know, it's funny. I know that they would be unhappy, but I haven't really, you know, they were so busy yesterday putting together the last TVs.
Right.
And the people who I talked to, like, it was everything about the TVs. But yes, were they unhappy? Did they feel they didn't get their side? Yes. As far as, like, you know, what they were doing, I think they were concentrating on other things, really.
Yeah. WWE said they reached out to Oliver with some facts that he did not get right. Do we know what they
want? No, I actually asked about that and did not get an answer of what the facts are, what the statements were. You know, other than I know that they were in, their people and the producers of the piece were in long discussions prior to the piece airing, and I guess they felt that their points were not, their, you know, points that they made were not addressed on the piece.
What was your take on the piece?
You know, it's menace comedy, so it's really hard. I when I watched it, I laughed a lot.
Yeah.
You know, because I thought some of the stuff was kind of funny. I mean, there's legitimate stuff in there for sure. A lot of the stuff was, you know, I mean, the business has changed so much in so many ways. And I mean, if you're talking about the business of even 9 years ago, you know, it was probably as bad as they, made it, and in some ways maybe even worse. But it has changed for the better. But, you know, again, some of the points, the talent, you know, I don't think the talent gets, if you compare what athletes in other sports get, do they get a fair chunk of the revenue pie? They do not. Should they be employees? Of course they should. They're not independent contractors in any way, shape, or form, right, in my mind. So, I mean, those points were valid points. You know, a lot of people, you know, I don't like to be one of those people who, like, looks at a piece and I can nitpick the small things, and believe me, I can on this one, and then use that to say, oh, everything is wrong in it. There was valid stuff in there, and then there was some stuff that was kind of undated, you know, dated in there.
Yeah, and I also thought he maybe, he portrayed it as a very, like you said, yes, they should be employees. I'm not sure anyone would dispute that. And whatever you feel about Vince, obviously there's a lot of issues there, but I do think a lot of wrestlers would tell you that he has helped them in ways, whether it's paying for rehab or, you know, trying to, you know.
He's not a monster, you know, or anything like that. And I guess if you watch that because of that old Armin Katan clip, which I hadn't seen that in probably like whatever it was, 14 years.
Right.
And at the time, because Vince was kind of a crazy guy in a lot of ways, I mean, it was still kind of shocking then, but it fit into my kind of mentality. Well, Vince could do this. But when you watch it now and you think about Vince today and you see that clip, it's like, and also watching it with 2019 eyes where, you know, CEOs are a lot more conservative about making spectacles of himself, like, you know, compared to whatever it is 15 years ago or whatever the year was, more than 15 years ago. It's like, that clip where he was just like, we had nothing to do with any of these deaths, right, and we take no responsibility, and he slaps the thing. He came off really bad in that clip. When I watched it, I goes, oh, my God, yeah, he looked bad there.
It's a great clip. I like the one, though, when he threatened to beat up Bob Costas a little better. That was my favorite. That was pretty good. And it was interesting. I thought there was, like you said, if you're going to – I thought Oliver did a good job, laying it out. It is weird, like you said, when they mix in some jokes, although I thought the Michael P.S. Hayes line was phenomenal. and it was a little sloppy. They ran a graphic about Randy Savage's death, but he – died in a car accident, so that really didn't.
Well, he had a heart attack while driving a car.
Okay,
so it wasn't like it was a car accident.
Okay, that's my mistake then. Okay,
they listed a couple of deaths, and they had Bundy who just died, who was 61, and I mean you could endlessly list guys under 45, which they didn't do.
Right.
They could have like harped on the deaths because the young deaths of pro wrestlers, not as much now, but certainly like 10 years ago, it was horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, it really was.
Yeah. It does seem like it has slowed down, which...
It absolutely has.
Yeah.
It's different. People pass away in wrestling, but they're now they're in their 70s and 80s.
And it also seems like the wrestlers today are more conscious about taking care of themselves in terms of what they eat and working out. And
absolutely.
So I think that's a big
absolutely
factor.
And also, before... it was so much dependent upon how you looked.
Yeah.
So the impetus to use steroids was so high, and now it really is about how you perform. I mean, how you look is important, but, one of the things people... Number one, I think that a lot of the young wrestlers have seen what happened to the older generation
mm-hmm.
and don't want to make those mistakes, so they don't get as carried away with whether it's painkillers or steroids.
Right.
You don't see that. And also, guys don't want to get hurt. And one of the things about the guys on steroids is they were getting hurt a lot. I mean, the guys now get hurt for other reasons. They still get hurt, but it's different kinds of injuries now than compared to before.
Yeah.
Now it's a lot of knee injuries and shoulder injuries. Then it was a lot of torn muscles.
Yeah. Vince himself tearing the quad at Royal Rumble. It's
two quads. The same day.
Exactly.
My God, yeah.
Triple H famously tearing quads on TV.
Yeah.
Before Mania, the other thing I wanted to ask you about is the WWE deal with Fox. I've seen a couple of things. They probably come from your newsletter. Two issues. One about maybe Fox was having cold feet because the ratings for Raw have been really bad, and maybe
I haven't heard anything on that. But the ratings for SmackDown, certainly have declined significantly since the deal was signed.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I haven't heard cold feet. I know people have speculated, but I haven't heard that. But yeah.
So the plan as of now is to still have SmackDown on Fox.
SmackDown on Fox, 2 hours, 8 to 10 on Friday, starting October 4th. Yeah.
October 4th, and there was a rumbling I saw about Fox maybe wanting it to not be PG and to maybe take it to. I haven't heard that.
I haven't heard that either.
Okay.
The only thing I heard was that they wanted, because it's part of a block in Thursday NFL and Saturday,
right.
The whole weekend of, football and all that, that they wanted, conducive to sports. I mean, it's not a sports show, but maybe something that wouldn't be embarrassing for sports people to plug. You know what I mean? I'd heard like maybe more of a sports influence on the show.
Gotcha.
I hadn't heard more risque or anything like that. That's probably going to be dependent upon a lot of different factors of, ratings and things like that. And again, it's kind of like what they're going to do on Fox. It's in so many more homes than before, but it's also on a Friday, which is a lot worse night than a Tuesday. So how does that all wash out? And also Fox does real well on Friday nights. So they're going to, I think the bar of what they need to do is, well into the 3 millions, and they're right at about low 2 millions. So they're going to need a big increase. And they will get an increase going on Fox, but some of that will also blow back because they're going to lose a lot of viewers being on Friday.
It's also going to be fascinating, to hear Joe Buck reading those promos for SmackDown. I cannot wait to hear that. But I do think, listen, you can't – I'm not saying it's going to increase the numbers to 3 million. I would never ever even be so dumb as to predict that. But you're going to have SmackDown promoted – nonstop on Thursday Night Football, you're going to get a nice little bump, I think, from that.
Absolutely. I think that's one thing that no one is really, I won't say no one is thinking about, but it's not really being talked about, is they're going to be promoted in front of, you know, like, yeah, on Thursday Night Football, in front of millions and millions of people,
yeah,
they're going to have the credibility of being on Fox that a lot more people can see. So there's an impetus there with the greater exposure that, in theory, should help other aspects of the business, like the live shows, because, I think you're a more credible product when you're on a network.
Yeah. And I wouldn't be shocked to see some of the WWE people maybe like pop up on the pregame and halftime show, especially in the beginning of the season, to promote it. I would expect that for sure.
Well, exactly. And also Fox, because they have so much money invested, having these guys all over the network, which in turn then makes them bigger stars.
Yeah.
And bigger stars, then people will pay more money for their merchandise and to see them live. So there's a synergistic effect that's a lot more than just, okay, they're getting X number more dollars in television rights. This would also increase their business across the board.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Mania. I have a bunch of topics. I'll just throw them right at you, and we can go rapid fire here and try to cover as much for the listeners as possible. First ever women's main event, obviously, Becky Lynch, Charlotte Flair, and Ronda Rousey. Listen, I give WWE full credit for doing it, but I feel like they had no choice. I mean, they could have gone Rollins-Lesnar as the main event, but I don't feel like that match has any juice. The company right now is all about Becky Lynch and nothing else. Was there any other option for WWE as the main event?
I mean, that was the option, but it was such a weak option. Like, I mean, for the last year, the idea that next year was going to, you know, coming out of last year's WrestleMania because of Ronda Rousey, the idea that you're going to main event next year has always been talked about, and I always thought it's been favored. But, you know, Vince sometimes, you know, you never know what's going to happen over the course of a year. Somebody might get hot, somebody might get hurt. But, you know, when everything came down, I always figured that this is how they would go, and yeah, it's the right call for sure.
Now, did they plan on Ronda being a heel, or did that have to happen because of what happened with Becky Lynch's popularity?
Yeah, they did not plan on turning Ronda Rousey heel, but the fans did it. And a lot of this, the one interesting thing about this show is that this show was very much driven by the fans as much as Vince McMahon. I mean, ultimately, it's Vince McMahon's decisions across the board.
Right.
But if you look at, like, Kofi Kingston in the match with Daniel Bryan, that was not their idea by any way, you know.
Right.
They had completely different plans for that match, but Kofi Kingston got hot. Becky Lynch, you know, I mean, she's been in the plans since about November for the match, but the original plans, you know, there were plans for this dating back, you know, since April, and she wasn't even in the picture till November for that match. So, yeah, the fans, and Ronda was supposed to be the babyface in that match. So, yeah, I mean, the fans, you know, spurred on a lot of changes.
What is the internal feeling that you hear from WWE people off the record about Rousey and how she's done? I feel like, you know, it's frightening when she gets the microphone in her hand, but other people think it's great. And I mean, I think it's rough, but that's just me. What is, like, inside WWE? What do they think about her?
The people who I know her love her.
Right.
As far as a performer, she has a certain intensity that, like, pretty much nobody can match. As far as, like, in the ring, she can make her matches feel real. She's got that stare. I mean, she's progressed as far as in the ring at a level quicker than, you know, almost anyone. I mean, and even from day one, even last year's WrestleMania, even though the whole thing was laid out and everything like that. I mean, who's had a debut match that good? And every pay-per-view, for the most part, she's delivered. She's delivered some phenomenal performances.
Yeah.
Mic work, yeah, you know. I mean, mic work is interesting. It's different. She's very passionate, but sometimes what she says is crazy, you know. So,
well, and also she also botches the promo sometimes, which,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. Well,
last week she did that.
She goes too fast.
Yeah.
But that's just her. I mean, she's her, you know. I mean, she's just a very, she's a unique person that you get, you know, the good with the bad.
And is she done after Mania?
That's a real good question. Mm-hmm. I mean, the original commitment would, you know, she's not booked on anything or advertised on anything after Monday.
Okay.
So it looks that way. I mean, but, you know, the plan, you know, when I first heard, it was like she's done right after WrestleMania, and I haven't heard different, but I was always told, you know, Vince, I mean,
right,
week of WrestleMania, he's going to come in because he's done with Lesnar on more than one occasion where Lesnar was done, gave notice, he's out of there, and then all of a sudden, that week of the show, Vince makes a deal and they stay. So
yeah.
I never say an absolute, but last word I heard, Monday would be it, yeah.
Will we see The Undertaker at WrestleMania 35?
That's a real good question. Mm-hmm. I've heard conflicting stories on that. So, the people who I know the best saying no, but I know people who are on the inside that say maybe, you know. But Undertaker's coming back, so it would, to me, it makes sense with Undertaker coming back in June, or a little before June, maybe in May, to shoot an angle that leads to that return. So, I mean, it's such a loaded show with so much, but. I wouldn't be surprised, but so, I can't say for sure.
So when you say he's coming back, is he coming back to do what, a limited schedule?
Yeah, just to do a match on the next Saudi Arabia show.
Oh, okay. Is he, did I see something, he's starting a podcast? I cannot believe that for one second.
I don't think so. Okay. I mean, there were the rumors that him and Conrad Thompson, but I asked Conrad Thompson, and Conrad Thompson said no.
Oh, okay, you know,
But I don't think, Undertaker with a podcast would be kind of weird.
Yeah. I love that you speak to Conrad. I'm a big Something to Wrestle With podcast listener, so it's funny to me that you speak to Conrad when, you know, Bruce and, I guess you and Bruce have some issues. Yeah. Let's just say
I know
that.
I'm a bad guy on his shows, but I get along with Conrad real well.
Do you, I'll go off the beaten path for one second. Do you listen to Something to Wrestle With in 83 weeks every week to hear what they say about you, or
I get it
on Twitter?
I don't have time for that, and that show I wouldn't listen to anyway, you know, because there's nothing to it for me. I can't live 20 years ago, you know what
right.
I mean? And, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, stuff I reported 20 years ago was what it was.
Right.
I mean, it's like, I'm a good reporter. I'm like a really good reporter. So the idea that, like, if anything I reported then wasn't true, I mean, Eric, not just Eric, but everyone in WCW that I talked to, which was everyone,
right. They
would have gone, hey, you know, you missed this one. So the next week it'd be corrected. If it's something that hasn't been corrected in 20 years ago, he's trying to give some other story, that's, you know, it couldn't be true because... Again, you know, it's like, this is the publication of record, and, you know, I'm real good at correcting even the smallest things. So that's why, like, to me, it's just like, you know, that's his issue, and that's my thing on that. The Bruce shows I sometimes listen to because I find Bruce real entertaining.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
I like that. All right, back to Mania. I had to get that in there. It's Cena. Will we see Mr. John Cena?
He's already in town,
okay.
So we'll see him.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's a really, that's one of the best kept secrets they've ever had is who John Cena's wrestling. I mean, even people who knew everything on the card were either not telling or saying they didn't know, like, what the Cena match is. And it hasn't been, you know, we had our last Raw last night, so there's no promotion of it. He's going to show up, and whatever his match is, it's going to be something. It might be Elias. I could see that, but... I know the other ideas have been talked about for Elias, too, so I don't know what it's going to be.
I'm fascinated by how fascinated John Cena has become in the past year or so. As, you know, he's been away, and the fans were sick of him, and they've always, you know, they got sick of him, and they would boo him. But he's sort of now in that post-wrestling world, and I feel like the fans appreciate him now a little more, maybe, and... He's a very interesting guy, I think.
Well, you know, here's the thing. When wrestlers get older, people get really nostalgic for it. And that's like when with Ric Flair, you know, every time Ric Flair tried to turn heel when he was older, it never worked, even though Ric Flair is technically a fantastic heel.
Yeah.
Because people just don't want to boo guys that they've watched for years and years and years. And it took Cena a long time to get there. But now, you know, now that he's in his 40s, people kind of look back and go, man, he really did work hard, and he really did have good matches, and he was a great rep for the company,
and all those things.
So it's
guy.
Like you kind of forgot, like, why did we boo him again? Oh yeah, because he was pushed. But boy, he was really good carrying the company. Yeah. Maybe, you know, let's face it, who else should have been pushed ahead of him? Nobody at that time.
Right, very good guy, very interesting guy too. Away from WWE, you mentioned Flair. Is Rick's health in a position where he can possibly get involved in the main event at WrestleMania?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think they'll put him in the ring. I mean, even if he could, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't muck up that match.
Okay. And then you mentioned Cena. A lot of people thought Cena would be wrestling Kurt Angle. I cannot believe they're giving Kurt Angle's last match to Baron Corbin. I thought it would change last night on Monday Night Raw. It didn't. That's still the plan?
God, you know, the day they announced it, I kept saying, there's no way this is happening.
And that's horrible, you know, for Kurt.
It's like what's the idea? And it's like, no, it's really happening. This one's not going to change. I mean, they may, you know, who knows? Maybe someone will show up but you know, everyone says the same thing, that what you just said, it was my initial reaction. It's kind of like, it's his last match, and you're going to put it with Baron Corbin? But we'll, you know, he will wrestle Baron Corbin.
Yeah.
Hopefully it will be really short, and then hopefully something happens, and, Maybe, you know, maybe it'll be somebody else. I don't know.
Biggest storyline blunder in WWE history for me was when they dropped the Kurt, Stephanie, Triple H love triangle storyline. They had something there, and then it went away. And they, I thought maybe when Kurt came back, they'd do something, but they blew it, in my opinion.
That's up there. I mean, when people talk about that, that's definitely up there. It was, the idea that Kurt would ditch Triple H for, Stephanie would ditch Triple H for Kurt. Seemed like the natural progression of that, and then they would get back together later. But they just didn't do it.
They had that kiss, and the crowd was wild for that. You mentioned surprises. Any chance we see Rob Gronkowski at WrestleMania?
I haven't heard anything on that.
He retired, and right away everyone's like, "Oh, he's going to be in the WWE." Which I don't believe.
I don't think that he'll ever be in the WWE full time. But the idea of going in there and doing a match here and there, like a Lesnar, I could absolutely see that. He likes it, and they love him. So the only reason I would say no is maybe his body's in a state that he doesn't want to do that. Because that's what happened, like with James Laurinaitis and with Kevin Green and some of those guys that. You know, wrestling wanted them. Mm-hmm. Kevin Green was really good at wrestling. James Laurinaitis had the background and the family members in wrestling. But after football was over, they didn't want to do wrestling because of the, if they wanted to beat up their body, they'd have played another year in the NFL.
Right. I could see Gronk being a special attraction type of deal, but I don't see him being on Monday Night Raw every week.
Well, he shouldn't be anyway. But as far as like a one-time thing or a one match, I could see that, especially if he wants to do it. Another guy was like D'Angelo Williams, who was absolutely great at pro wrestling.
Yep.
And he did one match, and I thought, oh, man, this guy is like the natural of all naturals, like Ronda Rousey or Kurt Angle. And he was just like, I guess his body was beat up from the NFL. I was like, I'm only going to do it once, and he never did another one.
Yeah, makes sense. A couple of more before we wrap. Dean Ambrose, is he done with WWE?
Yeah. I'm not sure the date, but it's in the next couple of weeks. So, yeah.
And
unless he changes his mind, which always can happen.
Yeah.
Because, there's been a lot, like I said with Brock, there have been so many times when Brock was done going back to UFC, and he's still there.
Since you mentioned Brock, what's his status?
Still there.
But he has a. Do you know when he has a contract until?
I don't even know when it is. Okay. I think he can pretty much, come and go as he pleases, pretty much. He can go and do the UFC fight. I know that he's going to be on the Saudi show.
Right.
But, UFC keeps talking about him and Daniel Cormier, but, and he's still getting drug tested by USADA. So anything's possible. He's clearly not closing the door, and probably by not closing the door, it makes him more money with Vince anyway, because Vince knows that, hey, he can go and make $9 million in one night if we don't give him what he wants.
Maybe the last one, we'll see. Obviously, the company for years wanted Roman to be the top superstar. Then the leukemia happened. He went away. He's back. Is the plan post-Mania? Because I know they're easing him back. I had Roman on this podcast a couple of weeks ago, and he talked about easing back into the schedule. Is the plan to make him the top guy again?
I think so. I think that I think that they still see him as far as on the male side of things as the one who's the most marketable, the best all around for what their purposes are. I think that's going to, him and Rollins will probably be the top guys, as far as on the male side, yeah.
Do you think they'd ever use the leukemia as a storyline?
To a degree, they already have.
Yeah.
If he goes and wins the title, will they use leukemia in the pre and the post as the story? Absolutely. That's just what they do, And of the things they do, I mean, it's actually true, so I can't mind them doing anything that's true. Sometimes they'll do stuff, when they use somebody who died, which I guess is also true, but when they've done that, sometimes they've done that, and I really cringe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're a long way away from the Brian Pillman days when that was going on.
The winning it for Eddie Guerrero for months and months and months got old.
All right. Any predictions? Any wild things we should do? Will there be a big surprise at Mania the Monday after Raw?
There always is.
Yeah. The Monday after Raw now is even as big as Mania. So,
they may save some stuff there too. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything you have that you say maybe look out for this or?
Lars Sullivan.
Okay.
Yeah. Lars Sullivan. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I. I know that he's going to be back. He was supposed to wrestle Cena at WrestleMania, right. And perhaps he still will, but I doubt it because it hasn't been built up. But he was gone, and I don't know when he's coming back. I don't even know 100% he's coming back, but I know he's probably coming back imminently. Yeah.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. I know wrestling fans will enjoy all the information. I want to have you back on, talk about really, you know, what you do with the newsletter. But for WrestleMania week, we had to get to like the news and information. So let's definitely get you back on the podcast. I would love that to chat more in depthly about. There's always something to talk about with WWE. Never a dull moment.
Never ends. Yeah, really.
All right. Thanks for coming on, Dave. Appreciate it. Enjoy WrestleMania.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Care.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. My thanks to Dave Meltzer there from the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. Publisher and editor. Nobody better to talk to for WrestleMania week. And my thanks also to Taylor Rooks from Bleacher Report. Check out her new show. That wraps up this edition of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. Please, if you are not a subscriber, hit that subscribe button app on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, anything. Hit the subscribe button. Helps a lot. We'll see you next week right here on the SI Media Podcast. Take care.